Testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. Designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized, interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Hi, it's Sierra Miller. I can't wait for you to check out my new collection of shoes and accessories at Designer Shoe Warehouse. If you love shoes as much as I do, then trust me, I got you. From cute sneakerinas to the perfect flip-flops to stunning heels, these shoes are all style, no drama. It's a girl's girl summer, and DSW has just the shoes. Shop the Sierra Miller collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
When I'm looking for high-quality furniture that doesn't break the bank, I don't have to settle for subpar styles because I can find everything I need at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, I can score everyday low prices on pieces that real customers love, like Consumer Reports recommended mattresses, real marble dining sets, and the best-selling modular Bob's sectional, which has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So stock up on five-star style and visit Bob's, where America shops for furniture.
Welcome to Synapse, Think Tank of the Air, featuring influencers, creatives, and top leaders in the Twin Cities. And now, here is our host, Steve LeBall.
Hello, welcome to the second episode of Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. Today we have with us several guests. We're all interrelated in some way, but that's something you'll find out as the program progresses. We have Jane Leonard from the Growth and Justice Institute. She's president. Brett Buckner from OneMen.org, he's managing director. And then we have Mirta Montoya from Legal Corps. She's the director of the program of Entrepreneurs of Color program. So welcome, everyone, and let's start with Mirta. Tell me your story.
Well, I have different stories, but I want to start with this story that basically changed my life. I decided to leave my country, not exactly to the States.
Which country?
Peru. I am originally from Peru. And then I decided to take a vacation in India, but doing an internship. It was a kind of intern vacation. I end up in India for 8 months, traveling around every province, almost every province, working in rural development with a small business in rural villages. And that experience just changed my mind completely, because even then I didn't speak any Hindi and my English wasn't that better. So, and I was a little bit, people thought that I was from that country because I look kind of Indian too.
Ah.
So, but it was a very interesting perspective that basic needs, basic questions, same feelings are the same, even if I travel so far away as this country. And then I end up in New York, and now I am here in Minnesota.
Okay, by way of India. So you didn't find your guru on the way.
No.
Okay, well, that search continues. Now, Brett Buckner, tell me your story.
Northsider, born and raised on the streets, you know, like I say. But I had a chance to get away for a little while to experience another part of the country. Went to a school in Hampton University that changed my life, historically black university. And I started to realize that we can actually participate at the highest levels. As Douglas Wilder was elected governor just a few years earlier, before I got there. And, you know, the town of Hampton was led by people of color, black people mainly. But we had a military base. Langley Air Force Base was literally a mile and a half away. And you saw how communities, when working together across lines for the betterment of the society, and again, that's a heavy military base out there, that we actually can make some magic happen. So when I came back home and realized how disconnected we were, I my life's kind of changed, and took a little while for me to get to this realm of 1MN, dealing with the issue of economic equity. Matter of fact, we never called it that back then. We just called it right back then. That now we have a chance to do something amazing. And, you know, I'm lucky to partner with a great friend here of Growth and Justice with Jane Leonard and the crew to put some things together on behalf of our society.
Well, you know, talking about all those military bases, I was sure you're going to say you joined the military.
You know, for about 3 minutes there, I thought about joining the Army ROTC. Actually, a good number of my friends were either Naval or Army ROTC, and I looked at what they had to do, and I was like, yeah, you know what? I like my, you know, 10:30 class. I'm good. So stayed the course.
Okay, just little bit of my story just before we get to Jane. Yeah, I was raised on military bases, so I kind of have an affinity. But
yes.
I figure I served then until the age of 13, so I didn't have to join up.
Exactly.
Okay, Jane. Jane
Hello?
Leonard.
Hi there. Yeah, I guess I have a lot of story points. I think it's because I'm a former journalist. But I in relation to what we're talking about today, I think just my own background of growing up here in Minnesota, like Brett, I was born in Minneapolis, but I quickly moved off to spend a lot of time with my grandparents on their farm in Mille Lacs County, and then my parents yanked us out of Minnesota at age 4 to go to Washington, D.C. My dad worked for Orville Freeman, who was governor at the time, and became Secretary of Agriculture under Kennedy and Johnson, and I spent the rest of my time then in kind of a split personality, spending all summer with my grandparents on the farm and my school year in Bethesda, Maryland and Washington, D.C. So I had this urban-rural experience my entire life, and that's really, I think, translating into what we're trying to do today.
Hmm. And we should mention that, by the way. What are we doing today? Thriving by Design.
Yes.
Now, I should explain that the hunt, there's a series of partnerships. It's kind of a maze. If we had a diagram, it would confuse Einstein. But we have, Jane, you're running Growth and Justice.
Correct.
And you're collaborating with Brett and OneMin.org.
Yes.
Yep.
So
yes.
How did that come about?
You know, that it's the age of the internet. I
so
came
you have
on
a computer?
we do have computers, yeah. I became president of Growth and Justice in January of this year. And a long time ago, I had acquired the URL oneminnesota.org. And in thinking about putting on this gathering, and we needed to set a legislative agenda for Growth and Justice, I just went out to the internet and saw, well, who else has oneminnesota.org? And Brett did. At onemn.org, and so I think I emailed you first, and then we talked.
Yeah,
so you didn't have a battle about domains.
No.
Well, ours actually, and quick commercial here, I guess. www.onemn. So the letters mn .org. Officially, we are oneminnesota.org, as listed by the Secretary of State and the Fed IRS crew, but. Yeah, no, we're a little different. So it was just serendipitous that it happened.
I have to believe there's the universe is working in wonderful and mysterious ways, yes. And we are all here together. And I'm just thrilled. And and Brett and I have become fast friends. And I'm just grateful for the trust that we have, and that we're doing something pretty wild and crazy and wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's got to be optimistic because. If you look at the electoral map, there is no one min. There's like the urban areas are what blue. I get the colors confused. Which side is which?
Colors are colors.
So okay. The urban areas are tend to be Democrat, and the rural areas tend to be Republican. I mean, that's a generalization, but the thing is, it's kind of hard and fast. So how do you say one min? Is it going to be purple?
Well, the simple fact is that we still live in 87 counties across the states. We still have this amazing diversity of environment that we all share. And, you know, we're looking at it from that perspective. We're excited about bringing Minnesotans from different perspectives to discuss some key issues that can actually help everybody, racially, regionally, gender, social, you name it. We're going to try to solve for it, but to be as aggressive in that approach to ensure we're not trying to retread too much, but we are trying to move society forward and challenge our elected officials and appointed leaders to do the best, going back to what we used to do in Minnesota, mm-hmm. really start to tread new ground.
Well, I think it used to be an old idea in politics that you served everyone, and that seems to be evaporating a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, Mirtha, have you traveled much to beyond the metro area?
Yes, definitely, because the work we do, we try to provide legal advice to not only the metro area, rural areas as well. We were in with the Leech Lake Native American tribe up there. We are in Mankato. We are also in Rochester, and trying to connect some other rural areas through different agencies. For example, we work with the Mexican Council, and they travel to every other community that is far away from the metro area. So we partner with these organizations, and we reach them. So right now, for example, St. Cloud is also another of our base places of work. And how we work is through clinics. So we create a brief advice clinic, is how we call it, where you can meet with a lawyer. And we provide there the legal advice, but also we are trying to bring some educational and informative, important information that the community could have to develop their own business. So, yes, that's in Minnesota. And then definitely I travel. I like to travel a lot. I like to explore. I mean, I have that in my set of mind, and I went to different other states, South Dakota, Wisconsin, and I'm trying to do the 50 states eventually.
Have you ever been to the Upper Sioux Reservation just outside of Granite Falls?
No. We're going to have that nice opportunity now, I think.
What's going on there? This is the big secret here. This is what we're gathered here to talk about, a big event, a conference, 3-day conference at the Upper Sioux Reservation. Jane, do you know anything about this?
I know a little bit about it. it's really a kickoff. We'll get that up front to a 6-month process to create the One Minnesota Equity Blueprint. And so we are gathering people from across the state, rural, urban, suburban. We're trying to get people from every state senate district and all 11 nations, Native nations. And we picked Upper Sioux community in part because we wanted to be in a smaller town, particularly to get people who hadn't been out to greater Minnesota to be participating or experiencing that. And that entire area of southwestern Minnesota is really on the move and actually very forward thinking about inclusion, welcoming. They've done a lot of work on entrepreneurship, as you mentioned, the immigrant entrepreneur, microenterprise. They're doing a lot of work with childcare, and they're just, we wanted people to see that besides the Twin Cities, which everybody hears about, there is so much going on in greater Minnesota that we all can learn from, and people can learn from each other. And so the gathering is a way to kind of help get everybody a little up to speed on what's happening across the state and
the various issues and concerns
that
people have.
Right, yeah. And then, we're having Susan Brower, the state demographer, come and do an overview of both the sort of demographic and economic trends. Craig Helmstetter from the American Public Media Research Lab and their ground level survey is going to give his overview from all of that research that they've been doing. And we've got Dr. Bruce Corey. I'll let Brett talk a little bit about Dr. Corey and the shared sustainable prosperity model. Mm-hmm. We're just trying to get all of us as a family, if you will, informed about what's happening to our home and then work together to make some things happen to make sure that everybody, that it's working for everybody. Hmm. So,
Bruce Corey, who's he?
Dr. Bruce Corey, currently on leave from Concordia University as a vice president, is now the director of economic development in St. Paul for Melvin Carter.
Part of the new Brain Trust over there.
Yes, yes. It's a very unique team, and they're doing some amazing and groundbreaking work from a municipality. But also my business partner on hiatus, now that he is serving for the the government, and now as I call him the man, and I get to scream at him when certain things don't take place. But, you know, he has this great model that he's using in St. Paul and that we do use with 1MN, called the Shared Sustainable Prosperity Model, which basically brings people together, looks at the data, elevates the assets of the community, and tries to create the necessary deals and accountability pieces to see prosperity.
Well, it sounds like you're working with the system.
We are working within and outside, I would
within
say.
Within and
we're,
without.
Yeah.
Yes. So you're kind of a grassroots. You don't begin your studies in some legislative committee.
Correct.
You begin out there.
With the people.
Yes.
With the people.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. So that's something, I don't know, is that done much?
Well, I'll just speak from Growth and Justice's point of view. You know, we are known as a think tank, a policy.
A real think tank. We're just the think tank of the air, but you're,
there you go. That's right.
You're in concrete.
That's why it works, man.
Yeah. And one of the things that we've always honored is going outside of our own brains, our own ideas to get ideas from people who actually live in the places that are going to be affected by whatever is happening. And I've always thought that way because I'm a community development person, not only in heart, but also in my professional work. And we don't do anything without, you know, working in and with the community first. So we don't want to impose anything. And this is all about getting insights from everyone like Myrta, and, you know, from all the perspectives and all the wisdom that we all hold, and we just don't get a chance to share it.
Well, Myrta, I mean, you grew up in Peru. You went to India for your life-changing transformation.
India.
Right. Well, so did you see much of that grassroots efforts where it bubbled up from the ground and then got presented to the government as a policy proposal?
I will see that. I think is the best way. I mean, we do very small work. I mean, I cannot tell that I am wise. I am 33 years old. I have 2 years in Minnesota, but my work basically in legal course is teaching me that we, as you say, we cannot impose models. People cannot be told what to do. Because everybody, especially the immigrant communities, came with a different perspective. Each one, each community. It's even, you cannot create a model for the communities of color. That, to be honest, for me, is like communities of color is like, no, they should be communities. They are not, it's not different, you know, there is no different colors there. And they can, they have a lot to share, a lot of wisdom, a lot of background, how to do things, business, how to interact with society, and taking that from the ground and creating something that can be positive for them and for also for everybody is the best way, I think. I mean, right now, I can tell how many things change because this administration, people is so afraid of what they should do, why they shouldn't do. They don't feel welcome. So it's I can't wait to be in this meeting to talk about and listen to all these topics because it's, yes, I think it's very, very interesting and exciting.
It sounds like your job is doing the same thing. It's the interface between people and the law.
Mm.
So
exactly.
You're trying to change the law. You're trying to let them know what they can do and can't do in their entrepreneurship journey.
Yes. Basically, I feel like I am like the connection between two systems, the community and the traditional system. They both don't understand too easily, so I try to adapt to both, and it's a skill that I learned because, well, I put myself in situations that taught me how to adapt to different situations. And I can see some of the barriers that each part, each side has. And I try to bring them together because you have the community that say why the system works as it works. And I need to tell them, this is not going to change. Those are the rules. You need to follow the rules. And then the traditional system tells me why they don't understand that this is the way. And I need to tell them, maybe because we are not communicating it in a better way, or we could take another path or another option. So it's challenging. It's every day. That's my work every day. But I enjoy it a lot because I'm learning. I am learning from almost 5 different communities from around the world in one state.
Well, we're all going to be learning, and especially Mirta and myself, we're going to be delegates to this conference in the Upper Sioux Reservation. So I'm kind of going because I'm just basically curious. I've been a journalist most of my life, and I like to go out and see things. The last time I went out around the state was when I worked in the administration of Governor Jesse Ventura. So Lieutenant Governor Mayshunk wanted to visit every school district in the state.
I remember that.
I didn't make it on all those journeys, but I made it to about 200. And there was a lot of problems going on in small towns because the bigger hubs would expand, and so your lawyers and doctors would move to the bigger hubs. And then all of a sudden you had no professionals on the school board, and then you had the schools running out of kids, and so they had to consolidate. And so that led to people not wanting to move to that town.
Yeah.
You're listening to Synapse Think Tank of the Air. We're here with Jane Leonard from Growth and Justice, Brett Buckner with OneMin.org, and Mirta Montoya with Legal Corps.
Synapse Think Tank of the Air. We'll be back in a moment.
And we're back with Synapse Think Tank of the Air. And it's what irony, we're here with a real think tank person. Now, Jane Leonard, you run Growth and Justice. I mean, Growth and Justice, is it apolitical?
Yes, I would say that it is.
You paused there for a second.
I did pause. I mean, it just depends on your definitions of certain words. I mean,
growth.
Well, Growth and Justice is our name, and it's our value. We are there to support business growth, economic inclusion, and social justice. So sometimes those are seen as distinct things. And what we are trying to say is that they go right together. And in particular for this gathering that we're doing next in 2 weeks. Oh my gosh, it's 2 weeks.
Start packing.
We see after studying and talking and all sorts of things and just our own belief system that equity is the superior growth model and diversity is strength. And I know you were asking us about the idea of one Minnesota and are we sort of trying to homogenize things. Furthest thing from the truth of that, I think all of us, and I'm not going to include Mirta because I don't know her quite yet, but I think both Brett and I share the idea that there's a spirit of one Minnesota, that we all share this home. We really honor diversity, and we want to build on that diversity to have economies and communities that work for everybody.
That's probably one of the things that's been happening in the last 20 years, a greater diversity throughout the small towns and cities in Minnesota for work, I presume. I know they have the meatpacking plants in some cities in
Austin
and elsewhere.
The Marvin Windows, all sorts of businesses are depending on existing talent and new talent. So,
I mean, it's the simple thing of, in Western Minnesota specifically, most of those towns were struggling until the influx of citizens, residents from across the globe. And what we, from 1MN.org standpoint, again, Dr. Corey's group came together about 17 years ago with the Ventura push around the economic conversation, really started to aggregate the numbers for communities of color and telling the full story. But it was the influx of new Minnesotans to Western Minnesota that basically saved Western Minnesota in the grand scheme of things. And we'll hear more of those stories when we get to Granite Falls. What we are trying to point out over the next 5 years, since we do sunsets, our organization sunsets in December 31st, 2022. So we're pushing very hard to make things happen, to remind people Minnesota does not grow without our new Minnesotans, period. And that we're not just to be at the table, we're going to be part of building the table. We're going to be a part of saying where the table moves to, how it's going to work from that point on. And that it's actually in the best interest of everybody to make sure that we actually have it. Minnesota has, well, the metropolitan area has close to 100,000 jobs that need to be filled by 2020. And we are woefully short in getting that done. It's going to take the our people from across the country and across the globe in order to make sure our economy continues on. Hmm. So that's where one immense point is. We're political. We just don't take sides.
not as an organization.
But. As an organization, but we do have one of our major components of our operations is our civic and democracy engagement activities, mm-hmm. where we actually do aggressive voter engagement and education program, and then also mobilization through mm-hmm. our program called Color the Vote. So we make sure that people understand that their vote is not just power, but is literally life right now.
Hmm. And makes a big difference in your future. You mentioned Bruce yeah. Corey. Now, he's from India. So he's an immigrant. He's a new Minnesotan. And what I like about his modus operandi, mm-hmm. he's an economist.
Mm-hmm.
So he collected all the numbers for the value that the immigrants added to the community. Mm-hmm. So when people say, hey, they're a drain on our economy, he can say, well, no, they're not. Here are the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Do numbers convince everybody, or there seems to be kind of a strong emotional component to the anti-immigrant feelings?
It's a great question. But from our standpoint, we know that we have changed minds and direction when we do use the numbers, the facts, that that quite honestly, it's not even so much those coming from across the globe, those who are already here, that the added value – not just to add the value, the base at times of our financial well-being as Minnesotans. So it's we're going to continue to remind all municipalities in the state that if you take out certain populations, we stall, period. We are blessed with 19 Fortune 5s, you know, here in the state of Minnesota, and that's great. But most of our work is done in, you know, Main Street, Minnesota, and that, you know, the meat packing plants and the, you know, smaller, you know, shops and everything else that we all have a part in, and that we all definitely share pride in seeing it get better. And we're just trying to figure out how we can actually build a little stronger together.
Hmm. So a lot of it used to be just migrant farmers coming up to help put the crops away, and that was needed too. When you talk, I think, to some of the business owners that employ immigrants, they're all for more immigrants. Yeah. But then you get to the townspeople or, you know, just people in anywhere in the neighborhood, there's kind of a sense of fear that's been propagated that these people are somehow dangerous and they don't see the good side. So for the numbers, Your main approach is to the let's see, it's my time to wake up.
Uh-huh.
Your main approach is to then take findings from your work in outside of Granite Falls, mm-hmm. have people meet in their communities, and then build some proposals, and those go to what, to the governor. Now, is the governor supposedly someone that looks at the numbers?
Whoever that will be.
Whoever that will be.
Yeah. We have talked about the process being that coming out of this gathering in Upper Sioux Community in Granite Falls, we will have an outline of a blueprint, and delegates like Myrta and you, Steve, will have committed to helping to co-host a community meeting to get more input from wherever you live.
So we don't do a we don't pick a small town somewhere. We go to our own neighborhood.
You go to your own neighborhood, right? Because you are right. Okay. You are loved there. Hopefully,
we hope so. If I go to the right bar, I can attract a lot of people.
Yeah.
Love it. We'll
that's,
be there.
That's fine. We'll be there. Yep.
So then I ask them questions about what they think about X, Y, and Z.
Well, we're all going to work together on continuing to build that blueprint. We're hoping that we can bug you with emails and conference calls and, you know, maybe a few meetings here and there between the time that we all say goodbye in Upper Sioux community and head to our respective communities and the fall when we're looking to do these community meetings in September and October. And as you asked, you know, you're going to give this to the governor. Well, yes, that, you know, whoever the governor is, we are going to pass this along to the governor and to the legislators. But we also want to pass it back to our communities. There's so many resources in Minnesota, and yet we tend to fragment them. And so if we can get people to align what they already have, mm-hmm. I think we're going to be so much stronger. And so it really is all of us. I mean, I take to heart, you know, the we the people. That we all have to play a role here. That's the right and responsibility of us as residents. We want to engage not only in our local communities, but in our shared community of Minnesota.
Mm. Well, Mirta, you've been so fortunate in that you've seen so many different kinds of people. You can see the commonality.
Yes, I can see the commonality. It's, at least for my eyes, it are basic things that are similar everywhere. How we put them in words or how we communicate them is different. And unfortunately, and it's something that is the first time I see in my life, is the fear of a community about the things that are different. No bad, no good, different. But that fear is what I think is stopping Minnesota. I mean, I do it in the most respectful way. Minnesota welcomed me so nicely and everything, but that's something that is not good in that part, because this is a place that is so diverse. I compare, many people ask me, how is Minnesota? And I tell them, imagine Queens from New York, in New York, this neighborhood that you can find a great restaurant, a Latino restaurant, East African restaurant, Mediterranean food. Everybody, you can see different ethnicities, languages, but still you don't feel that is that welcoming area, that everybody feels comfortable to speak their language, to walk with their own way to walk, or to be themselves. So because there are some barriers that even me, I am still learning. Yeah.
Well, there's a thing in Minnesota called Minnesota Nice.
Ah, yeah.
And there's a lot of different reactions to what that actually means. Are people really nice? Or are they just passive-aggressive, avoiding any confrontation? And then the etymology of nice, I'm a word nerd, so the etymology of nice, actually, nice is shortened from nescience.
Mm.
So it means not shunt. In other words, unconscious. So a nice person used to be an unconscious person that used to bring up ridiculous things in the middle of a conversation, like non sequiturs. You're so nescient, you know. And that became the word nice. And then over time, the craftsmen would work on these things, and they'd pay attention to little details that no one else would pay attention to. So they were kind of off the mainstream there, and they would say, oh, nice work.
Mm.
And so then it became a positive. Yeah. But I often wonder, is Minnesota Nice maybe have both those? They're gentle and oblivious at the same time.
I had that experience. The first year I was here, I was like, oh my God, this is the best place in earth. You go to the street, everything is in order, organized. People open the door for you. They say, good morning. The bus driver tells me how I am doing. That's incredible. And then at the end of that year, I was trying to do Minnesota and friends, because if you are so nice with me, okay, I am Latina. I am like, yes, let's be nice. Let's talk. And then, no, it was a stop, like, no, until here. And that's what many other communities tell me, you know. It's that difficult interaction. But the good thing is it's a welcoming environment, and I take that as a positive thing. It's polite, it's welcoming, it's respectful, especially Minneapolis with all these, you know, progressive perspectives.
could be worse. There are some other areas in the state.
That's a good Minnesota attitude. It could be worse.
But
it's along there with, well, that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, I see the potential there. And yeah, that's my experience.
Hmm. And, well, we know your organizations are apolitical. But, Brett, I happen to know you're kind of an insider for one of the political sides.
It's blue.
It's blue. And can you give us a brief summary? What the heck is going on in the political races for governor these days, and maybe even attorney general and Congress? What can you sum it up if you have it clear in your brain?
Well, it's personal aspirations. It's opportunity. It's
okay. Name names.
No.
You're not going to talk about the people?
No, you never do that. But what you do...
Well, just tell us who's running.
I mean, that I can share because okay. That's pretty much public knowledge. And, you know, Secretary of State has that information. So we're good there. Stay there.
Reticence.
It's just how would I call this? Smart.
You
know, knowing that, you know, there's friends across the board and we're excited. It'll be a robust conversation. Quite honestly, everybody wants to make things nice and neat as it relates to democracy, small d, conversations. And quite honestly, it's not. We need a robust conversation right now. We need people to really point out why that a party is just a group of individuals who believe that this individual represents their point of view, and that's who they're pointing out. But that should not limit the conversation and limit individuals to join it on. And to have a primary process to really vet out who's going to lead our state for the next 4 years, to answer some very big questions of how you're going to include individuals of all walks of life, and to think creatively about the economy in this, God knows what this is right now. We're down the rabbit hole, and we took a right even. That we're going to need some very, very talented individuals to lead that charge. So at the governor's level, we do have an endorsed candidate for Team Blue. I won't use party names, but yeah, Team Blue. With Erin Murphy, had a chance to speak with her on our podcast yesterday, Politics and Hip Hop, actually. And she's revved up, ready to go. But there's some other talented individuals, Congressman Tim Walz, you know, as well as, the current, Attorney General, Lori Swanson, whose running mate is Congressman Rick Nolan.
Who's leaving from up in the Duluth area.
Yeah, and then you have your attorney general piece with Congressman Keith Ellis. So literally we have three sitting Congress people leaving their positions to run for state opportunities. And
it's a cross between dominoes and musical chairs.
Well, that's what it caused, a great little carousel. And but there'll be a robust conversation there. Deb Hillstrom is now running for the AG seat as well. Mike Rothman, the current former commissioner of Commerce.
Commerce.
Yeah. I don't know why I want to call him former. I thought he was still there. And Tom Foley, who was the former county attorney for Ramsey. So, I mean, we have a very, very great lineup on the blue side. And on the red side, you know, Jeff Johnson and Tim Pawlenty are going to be going at it, which is it's going to be a very, very, very interesting fight about which direction that community goes. Hmm. Tim Pawlenty has the money, so he doesn't have to worry about the party infrastructure, and he has 100% name recognition across the state.
I've heard of him.
Yeah.
I've met him once, I think.
Oh, I've met him, and I've actually worked with some of his staff people, and they're fine people. We do remind people that the last time that Minnesota was actually in a lurch as it related to our financial situations, well, there was a guy named Pawlenty that was the governor. So I'm not going to put two and two together, but I'm just going to say four and go from there. So
you're cagey, aren't you, Brett?
I am operative, and I am proud of it. But at the end of the day, this is about the future of Minnesota and how we're going to really pull people together and move forward and not try to go back.
Hmm. Well, it's talking about the interface between the people and reality and the laws. It's kind of like that in politics when you have a platform that's rigid, and so that such things as a litmus test can qualify you or deny you from stepping forward.
Yeah.
I remember I used to cover the state political conventions, and Norm Coleman gave a long address when he was a Democrat, going on and on about how he was a Democrat. He listed things, and then no applause, no thundering applause, no, you know, hey, we love you, Norm. And so then he left. So he didn't quite fit the standards.
Didn't get the love from the people. No, not on that one.
Anyway, we're here talking about a big grassroots adventure going to take place in the Upper Sioux Reservation in 2 weeks from today, at the last few days of June. And we're all here together. Mirta, Montoya, and I will be delegates and kind of go on that adventure, like a big camp out. That's how I see it. And then Brett Buckner is here with OneMen.org, who avoided a fight over his website domain name with Jane Leonard from Wealth and Justice.
There was no fight.
This is such a nonviolent opportunity. Let's see if we can maintain this.
We're just glad to find each other.
Exactly.
If we can maintain this calm and peace and dignity over the break, we'll be right back.
Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. We'll be back in a moment.
And we're back with Synapse Think Tank of the Air with some real think tank people. And some people, even if you're... Is OneMen.org, is that a think tank?
Technically it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but Mirta, Legal Corps is not a think tank, it's a service.
It's a nonprofit organization, so it's a service. We provide legal advice services based in the pro bono work of private lawyers. So
you take real lawyers.
We have around 500 lawyers from different private firms, Dorsey, 3M, Best Buy, Target, that they provide pro bono work to the community. Actually, it's something that they have to do every year, 50 hours of pro bono work. That's what the Minnesota Bar Association
calls. Oh, part of the legal ethics.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And they choose. They have a variety of options, and some of them choose to do the work with us and help develop businesses, help the inventors, and also other nonprofits. So we match with them, we take the clients, we help them, and that's more or less what I do. And my program especially works with the communities of color in Minnesota.
Now, are you an attorney?
I am an attorney in Peru.
Oh, in Peru.
In Peru. I need to do that. Eventually, I have to be one here. I am taking all the process that takes to become an attorney here in the States.
What's the biggest difference between law in Peru and the U.S.?
It's a big one. We have in Peru the civil law system, and here you have the commonwealth system.
What's your system?
Civil law. Yeah.
Civil law, okay.
Mm-hmm. So it's very different. It's basically we have codes for everything. The regulations are based in codes and paper documents. And here you have the judge and the jury who decide most of the things. And, of course, the administration with some regulations. So it's very different, but, I am...
You have to learn both.
I have to learn both. Yeah, I am now learning the American system, Commonwealth system.
Wow, I'd like to understand the American system someday.
I hope so, too.
There's so much going on, and you wonder, why did that happen? And one of the things that puzzles me is that there's people that say you must obey the law every time, and it's like the law is God. And then, but we know throughout history, some of these laws are terrible, and kind of to obey them, it's being unethical, really. I mean, that's why the whole thing is, you know, I'll be governed by my conscience, not by what it says. You know, the old, what was it, Thoreau and Emerson, civil disobedience kind of thing. So there's always kind of an asterisk. This is the law so far. And then who knows? But then you have the Constitution. That can even be changed. They're talking about a constitutional convention?
We're trying not to hear that too often. No. I'm all right, so let me throw on my other hat. My
Your constitutional analysis hat?
Chair of Common Cause Minnesota. And we deal with the issue of democracy. National organization. I'm the state chair of the advisory committee, and responsible for those conversations here. And having that constitutional convention conversation absolutely grinds my gears. at this moment in time.
Why?
Well, it's simply, if does the Constitution need to be updated to the needs and trajectory of the society? Yes. Are we in a place for that to take, for that to happen, that is actually going to be fair and just for all? No. And that climate.
Why?
Well, if you look at the political divide right now, first and foremost, to have a constitutional convention, you have to have 2/3 of the states at the state legislature. So it doesn't even need the governor's signature or anything like that to approve that they are requesting this constitutional convention. Scholars on one side say it's a very narrow approach. On for others, they say once you call it, the doors are open. So in this current environment, you have a major push by certain entities that would
now
like
that's
to see.
Another kind of entities that's so vague.
Meant to be.
My clipboard is an entity.
Yes, it is, and it probably is calling for a constitutional convention.
Let me hold it close.
By those who would like to see the balanced budget amendment ratified in the Constitution, which would really put a hindrance on the way that the United States government actually functions. But it's done to, as I would say, limit the potential growth and opportunity for all to participate in the government. That's one. But it also would do things such as really cement and things that are detrimental, such as gun rights and abortion and all those other key pieces that have been asked and answered through currently the proper channels.
But what if they had a system like the one you're using, where you hold these small town conventions, these conferences, and get the grassroots input, and then it kind of rises from the bottom that way? How would that work? Would you accept a constitutional convention that was approved on those grounds?
I would like for Congress to do its job.
That's an evasive answer.
That is the correct answer at this point.
Is it?
I would like for Congress to do the job that is currently that under the current set of laws, and it has the tools to be able to do it. The question is who do they shill for at times? And it's both sides. Let me be very clear about that. That you have individuals that want to see America done in a way that is definitely exclusionary than more inclusionary, that is more punitive than it is actually progressive or promoting. And unfortunately,
So instead of we the people, it's some of the people.
It's me, myself, and I, and the rest of y'all can fly a kite. And you know, the reality is that Congress has the tools and the abilities, but they did not do it. I just look at one major thing that a lot of people just kind of, I don't know why we're just accepting it. Congress, the Senate, did not do its job in giving Justice Garland a hearing. Qualified, nominated by the president. Senate has its responsibility to do it, but what they did was they took a political, highly political and very dangerous move on the grand scheme of things to not hear, you know, Justice Garland's record and to be able to give him his just due and moved on from there.
The way I would see that, you know, I've seen so much now. I'm old. So you get cynical. You look at these things and you start out as an idealist, an optimist. Jane, you seem like you're still an optimist.
I'm old too.
I know. That's why I'm kind of jealous.
I'm looking at our gray hair together here.
You have a cause, and how do you maintain that idealism in the face of reality?
Well, it's in my nature, but I also think it's the best choice. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's go forward, as Brett and Marta have said. You know, yes, many terrible things have happened in our history, and we are here today, and we have the ability, if we pull together, to make changes that will propel us forward into a century that I would love to consider the community century, because community is that pathway forward. And we've talked about this a lot with the gathering that, and to some it seems a bit trite, but you know, there is a lot of fear, as you said, Marta, out there. And there's this ability of certain people to say there's scarcity and we have to hold on to, you know, what we have and not share. And we are taking the high road of saying there's abundance, and we can create more abundance if we are welcoming of the people that are populating this planet now.
Grow more wealth.
Exactly. Grow more wealth, yeah.
I think that the growing and the immigration is not going to stop.
No.
I mean, the fear is not going to stop people coming to Minnesota. Minnesota is well known, and the rankings can tell you that it's one of the best states to live, to afford a house, to afford a job, and to feel secure. So this is, I mean, it's a reality, and I think that there is so much potential and so many good things in diversity that is only that we need to change. I even don't say to change, to communicate them and to let them know to the people that it's good, it's not bad. Nobody's going to take things from them. It's just how the world is changing. It's everywhere. It's not only here in Minnesota, it's everywhere.
Well, I was working on a project recently with Rondo Plaza, mm-hmm. and they wanted to honor the newcomers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was the editor for 4 plaques, and it's Somali, Oromo, Hmong, and Karen.
Mm-hmm.
And the commonality, well, they're all refugees, but it's all there's the biggest congregations of those people in Minnesota than any other state.
Right.
So that's kind of amazing. Mm-hmm. Why here? Why would they come here?
We are blessed with having pretty much the DNA to open the doors. I mean, if you think about how Minnesotans had to survive, even at the beginning of the territory and the state, you had to work together, you know, especially during the winters. That you really had to understand that we were all in this together and put aside your differences in order to survive. You may not at times really be like gung-ho about your neighbor or whatever else, but your humanity, which I think Minnesota allows you to really experience, really kicks in. And we say we need to reach out to our fellow human beings and make things happen from there. And that once we understand each other's talents and ideas, we all want the same thing. We want a roof over our head, something to provide our children a better future for, the chance to eat, the chance to grow and to really connect. It's not different. You can put different spins to it as relates to language, but we're all looking for the same thing. In Minnesota, I think for a long time, we understood the conversation of abundance, or at least shared prosperity. And we've gone away from that, saying that, well, we have reducing school budgets. We have reducing resources to redo our roads and bridges and everything else. And that's not the case. I mean, when we look at the economics of things, we are more prosperous mm-hmm. than we have ever been in our society. The problem is that it's going to few instead of the whole. And we have to do a better job. And that's policy that directs a good portion of it. Mm. But the people have to say exactly what are the actual needs and then go from there. There's
well,
a difference.
One of the key words that seems to erupt in a lot of these conversations, it's not just racial or cultural. There's also, you know, blue, red. There's just a lack of trust.
Yeah.
It's like the reds don't trust the blues don't. I mean, how can you live when you fear even your fellow Minnesotans that are, you know, of Norwegian stock, and then, you know, I trust these Norwegians, but not those Norwegians.
Well, what's amazing, and again, that's Jane, that's
John, Jane, are you Norwegian?
I'm half Swedish.
Okay. Close enough.
Close enough, yes, yes. Yeah, I mean, I remember in my early days, because we are both old, Steve, of working in...
Thanks, I needed to be reminded.
I'm embracing it, you know, I'm embracing it, so in my early days of working around the state, as Myrta has described, I remember going into certain towns where there was a German Catholic church and a Polish Catholic church and some other kind of Catholic church
yeah.
in a very small town. And, you know, there were divisions by many things. You know, there was the Swedish Lutheran church and the Norwegian Lutheran church.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the divisions have been there. I think what is... harder now is, as you pointed out, Brett, that we have a lot of resources and they seem to be clumping into one part of the population, perhaps, or one part of the income population, shall we say.
They're not dripping down.
They're not trickling down.
What's the old adage that was always said? And the most divided time in America is 11 o'clock on Sunday or something of that nature.
Right.
And we experience it in North Minneapolis. We have a significant African-American population, significant Hmong population, significant, at the time, Jewish community, Native community, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, we're all going to our different, I mean, now we see it with our schools. You know,
right.
Where I literally have seen, and it's one of my favorite stories that I tell across the board, when 20 kids from the neighborhood are right there, you know, playing with each other, you know, and just having a good time. And all of a sudden, four buses come in four different directions and five go and you go from there. And you really have to ask yourself, how do you build trust when you don't have interaction? Mm-hmm. How do you build trust when differences is actually built up as opposed to your common strengths? So our, you know, from one Minnesota standpoint is how do we create open, welcoming, and connected communities to ensure that we have prosperity for all?
Hmm. Well, community, there's another word that I know the etymology of. The com means together, but the mune, that's related to the word mutate, which means to change.
Hmm.
And so the idea of communication and community is to change together, to grow together.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
very optimistic.
Yeah.
But then it's also a euphemism. Could you tell the people in your community to blah 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 blah?
Yeah.
So it's not always seen as that broad, inclusive, positive thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
If I could just point out one thing that we are going to do to kind of twist everybody's mind about boundaries and different kinds of communities, you'll see if you come to this grand adventure, as you said, Steve, that our logo is actually based on the biomes of Minnesota, the ways in which we have differing areas of the state, and it's unique in the whole North American continent that these biomes come together in Minnesota. And so here in Minneapolis, for example...
What's a biome?
A biome is a unique plant, landscape, call it flora and fauna area. And so we all know it as the pines of northeastern Minnesota and the deciduous forest of our central region and the prairies of the west.
And the raccoons of St. Paul.
And the raccoons of St. Paul, which is a marvelous story, brought the whole world into St. Paul.
Wow.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Wow, slow news day.
Yeah. And, of course, you know, the raccoons don't care, you know, what county they live in. It's am I in the prairie, or, you know, they're usually in the deciduous forest. No.
Eastside, yeah.
Yeah, but this biome is something unique to Minnesota in that we share the coming together of these biomes across North America. So we are stewards of a pretty special place. And what I like to point out to people is that those biomes aren't imposed on us like municipal boundaries might be or county boundaries might be. They are natural, and they are always kind of mutating, if you will, depending on what's happening in the climate. And so just getting people to start thinking about, I share a lot here in Minneapolis with people up in Detroit Lakes, because we share that biome, or I share a lot if I'm on the western side of the suburbs here in the Twin Cities with people out in Granite Falls, because of the prairie starting right outside of our borders here in the Twin Cities. So we're trying to twist a little bit about how we see ourselves. And the other thing that we're having everybody do, and I think the two of you may have experienced it already, is taking the intercultural development inventory, which is an assessment of how...
Not yet.
I haven't done that.
Okay, well, make sure you do if you're a delegate. It's a way that you can kind of see where you are on a spectrum of cultural competence, intercultural competence.
And if we're incompetent, can we still go?
Of course.
Okay. That's even more so.
Even more so, yeah.
You need that.
You're not going to be called out, but there will be a kind of aggregate overview of, you know, who's in the room. And it's a way to start some conversations about how I, perhaps as a, you know, white person of quite some privilege, think I'm relating to a person from Peru who's here.
Okay, we'll find out in Granite
Falls.
We're down to our last minute.
Okay, sorry.
We're down to our last minute to end this conversation.
Oh,
it
wow.
goes so fast.
Yeah.
So just your final word, just in like a sentence or less, what are you expecting out of the Granite Falls venture, the Gambit, Thriving by Design?
I'm expecting that people will get to know each other and start some lifelong connections that will be really important for that person and our state.
Brett?
New way of looking at old problems. New way of looking at, new way to find new solutions to old problems.
Okay. Mirta, what do you expect?
I expect to find new ways to interconnect people from different communities. I'm in the path of discovering how it can be, but I thought was the only one thing having the same problem. But I hope to find that.
Okay. Yeah. And for my hope, I hope to see how ideas can trickle up. That's my gambit.
Very good.
Thanks for joining us here on Synapse Think Tank of the Air. Jane Leonard from Growth and Justice, Brett Buckner from OneMin.org, Mirta Montoya from the Legal Corps, and of course, our engineer. None of this could happen without Dan Cook. And this is a co-production with WCCO Radio. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Synapse Think Tank of the Air. I'm Leo Espinosa.
Hi, I'm Kirk Cameron. Is health insurance eating up your budget for 2026? If you're looking for ways to better steward your finances, consider this. Christian Healthcare Ministries is a health insurance alternative at half the cost. As a ministry, CHM allows you to share the burden of medical bills with other believers. Join CHM today by visiting chministries.org/solution. That's chministries.org/solution.
Did you know that there are over 200 legends like Andrew Jones, Albert Pujols, Felix Hernandez, and Ken Griffey Jr. in MLB The Show 26? Collect them all and current all-stars to build your perfect lineup. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
I keep seeing celebrities posts, me in the 90s versus now. Well, the person staring at me in the mirror is definitely not the same person that could pull off bootcut jeans. Time creeps up on us so slowly, you don't see it until suddenly you do. Same thing goes for your bills. A dollar here, an uptick there, it's a slow burn until one day you realize the price you're paying now is way higher than when you signed up. But at T-Mobile, customers had the lowest wireless bills versus Verizon and AT&T over the past 5 years. And with T-Mobile on their experience plans, you get a 5-year price guarantee, so you know exactly what your plan price will be for the next 5 years. So at least that's one thing that won't change over time. I can't guarantee you'll still look good with frosted tips, but T-Mobile can give you a clear guarantee on your wireless plan.
Lower bills based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 21 to Q4 25 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. Price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Exclusions like taxes and fees apply. See T-Mobile.com.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to lowes.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit lowes.com/terms for details. Subject to change.